Stay tuned to WPFW for updates and details.
I'm Kamaya.
I'm Amira.
I'm Kaya.
I'm Kamaya.
And you're listening to WPFW Washington.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county. From another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going across the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no.
What'd I do?
The jury of your peers, having found you guilty, 10 years.
Come on, get that set.
I was in jail too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice. That's what you find. Just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us here on Crossroads. Crossroads is heard around the world on WPFW, your station for jazz and justice. And as I was mentioning to a guest, we've been on the air 17 years, and this is the 13th time we dealt with this topic about the high, expensive phone rates, which is the subject of our topic for this morning, high telephone rates in New Jersey. And the same thing happened in New Jersey. It's happening all over the country in the United States in terms of this abusive, exorbitant phone rates for in jails and prisons. But before we start, we always like to open up with what we call the grapevine, information that you can use, the grapevine. Hey, as Nefla Freeman, our previous host, our previous colleague who was on just before we come on, he dealt with the same topic about as Trump abandoned police reforms and local officials vowed to press on and what's happening with the criminal justice system with the current administration. And Nefla Freeman had a couple of guests on that were really all knowledgeable about what's going on. So we'll start off with, as Trump abandons police reforms, these local officials vow to press on. The Department of Justice said it's pulling back from policing changes. Will cities and states have the tools to enforce them? This week, the Justice Department of Justice announced that it will begin pulling back from police reform efforts in 8 law enforcement agencies across the country, including Minneapolis, Phoenix, Louisville, Kentucky. It's a move that many expected and one we foresaw in previous newsletters. In all 8 locations, the department announced it is retracting its prior findings of unconstitutional policing, including racial discrimination. Those findings came under the Biden administration. In Minneapolis and Louisville, where the investigations led to preliminary plans for consent decrees, a binding agreement with specific reforms to be enforced by a judge. The department announced it is filing motions to have those agreements tossed out in court. The federal reversal on reform measures marks an unceremonious retreat from one of the most visible tools used to hold police departments accountable for civil rights abuses. The announcement came just days before the 5th anniversary of the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis, which animated one of the most intense public campaigns for police reform in U.S. history. The first Trump administration also sought to back out of or stall policing investigations and consent decrees. But this week's efforts mark a much aggressive about face. 5 years after George Floyd's murder, police reforms are being rolled back. As reforms stall in some states, the U.S. Supreme Court just made it easy for police to be sued. I just read that. Here we go. They're facing deportation with severe mental illness and now without a lawyer. The Trump administration recently ended a legal aid program, leaving immigrants who have mental health disorders on their own. In April, the Trump administration cut funding for a program that provided legal aid to immigrants with serious mental health conditions who were detained and facing deportation. The move has left attorneys scrambling to keep serving clients for whom they say legal representation can be a matter of life or death. The program known as National Qualified Representative Program has provided legal support to roughly 3,000 people since it began in 2013. Legal groups are now suing the government over its termination. In the meantime, many detainees with mental health disorders or serious cognitive disabilities are on their own. And these are the most vulnerable people, and we are stripping them of any modicum of due process. The consequences of this are either life or death. The unbearable darkness of jails in St. Louis, Cleveland, and Jackson, Mississippi, don't provide direct access to sunlight and fresh air, even when their own policy is required. Jails are notorious for inhumane conditions. Detainees often complain of violence, inedible food, limited programming, and subpar health care. Lack of sunlight may be an unexpected addition to this list, but sunlight deprivation causes a myriad of serious issues. Jails built in the last century often had few windows and little rooms for recreation and natural light. Bringing sunlight and fresh air into jails often takes a backseat to other pressing issues. But a lawsuit in San Francisco suggests forcing detainees to live in the dark could violate their constitutional rights. In 2021, a group of men awaiting trial at two California jails sued the city and county of San Francisco for being confined without fresh air and sunlight. This weekend, my wife and I, Martine, went to Bard College commencement exercises. And it was Bard College on the Hudson. And ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you, we really enjoyed ourselves. That was the first collegiate commencement exercises that we went to. And there was over 5,000 visitors, 700 students received diplomas, and we stayed for the whole shebang. And it was raining, it was cold. But let me tell you something. The chairman of the Board of Trustees, James Chambers, a friend of ours, and Leon Boastein, the president, and the other guests, they gave two powerful speeches about what the administration is doing in terms of repressing colleges, starting with Columbia and Harvard. And their remarks were right on cue. So I want to take our hat off to the chairman of the Board of Trustees, James Chambers, and Leon Boastein, and the other speakers. They were right on time. We enjoyed ourselves. Not only that, we were motivated and inspired. And I looked around to see if I could join the college right there on the spot. I was ready to go back to college, and I haven't been in 40 years, but I was ready to go today. Thank you, people, staff, and guests of Bard College on the Hudson. It was a tremendous program, and thanks to all of the 700 graduates, most of whom, or quite a few of whom, were from international students. They're from around the world. And quite, it's obviously looking at what's going on with Harvard, Columbia, and these other universities. But to the chairman and to the president and to the staff at Bard, thank you for a lovely evening and the commencement exercise. That's from my wife and I. Now let's get to our topic. Our show this morning is High Telephone Race in New Jersey Prisons. And the question is, why are we focusing on New Jersey? Crossroads goes worldwide, and New Jersey has just happened to be the starting point, because what's happening in New Jersey is happening all over the country in prisons and jails. And our guest this morning, Ms. Marlena Ubell, wrote an excellent article on the high cost of these prison telephone systems in America. I'm telling you, folks, you got folk who are going into debt and losing their property, their homes, paying the prison telephone rates. Because we know that in all prisons, one of the key factors that helping you to adjust when you're released is contact with the community, with your family, your loved ones. And when that contact is terminated, it increases the chance of depression, violence, recidivism, etc. So making access to telephone and communication with your loved ones is mandatory, it's necessary. And would you believe that we need this? Because if you can talk to your folks, and at the top of the show, we mentioned about the darkness and the unbearable places that some prisons have. You don't even get access to sunlight. So let me share this with you. There's some prisons where if you're confined, you never ever will see a tree or a blade of grass for your entire life. They got prisons constructed now. All you can do is look up at the sky, see the clouds or the ground. So this communication thing is more than just talking to your family, it's survival. It's about your life. It's about your sanity. It's about being able to make sure that you can come out and you got somebody to talk to. And when they started this thing of transporting prisoners to this Sea-Cog prison in San El Salvador, we were told that you go there for life. There's no communication with your family. There's no phones, no visits, no letters. You go there to die. And how can you lock somebody up and just send them away and then cut off all contact with the outside world? So this telephone issue has been going on for over 37 years. We dealt with it in 87 when they first started filing. There was a young lady from Washington, D.C., a grandmother, who filed and filed and filed. So we are fortunate to have someone who's knowledgeable and very informed on this, Ms. Marlena Ubell, Senior Policy Analyst for the New Jersey Policy Perspective. Good morning, Marlena.
Good morning to you. Thank you for having me.
And also joining us is our co-host, Ms. Nkechi Taifa, a fantastic attorney, and we call her our Energizer Bunny. She goes all over the world fighting on behalf of those less fortunate. I want to thank you for joining us with our guest, Nkechi, and my wife. Marlena, can you tell us briefly what the New Jersey Policy Perspective, because you wrote your article, and your article dealt with the high cost of these prison telephone systems all over the country. And we wanted to end, I'm sorry, your article stated, in predatory prison communication fees. Can you tell us first what your policy perspective is, please?
Yes, of course. So New Jersey Policy Perspective, we like to describe ourselves as a think and do tank because we do research, but we also want that research to be used to make positive change. We don't like to see our research sit on a shelf. We fight for policies that are dedicated to social, racial, and economic justice in the state of New Jersey.
So what drove you to this? What motivates you to write this article about ending predatory prison communication fees? How did you get involved with this?
I think there's two answers to that question. There's the professional answer and there's the personal answer. So the professional answer is that there are misconceptions about how prison works, especially in the state of New Jersey. They like to say, well, New Jersey does not allow private prisons. That's something that we do not allow in our state. But people don't understand that what that means doesn't necessarily, like, there are private companies that profit off of incarcerated people and their families. Just because the prisons themselves are run by the state doesn't mean these private companies don't have their hands in that system. So it's a professional answer, right? I think it's important that people realize this is happening. And the personal answer is that my best friend growing up, the father of her child was incarcerated when their child was very young for many years. And being able to communicate, to build that relationship that we know is so essential, not only for that child, but also for that parent, it was almost impossible for them to be able to afford to stay connected to each other. And that just the difficulty of that was really moving for
me. Why was it difficult to stay connected?
Because it was so expensive. Not only is it expensive, but you also have very limited access, right? There's a limit on the access that you have to communicate. So you're paying. We are these folks, people that are incarcerated and their loved ones are disproportionately already economically vulnerable, right? We are not incarcerating a lot of wealthy people. We are incarcerating people that don't have resources, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, as I said before, this has been going on for some time. This is our 13th show in 17 years on the high prison rates, the fees that prisons are charging. And it's unbelievable. There's people going into debt. They're losing their homes, their cars. Some people spending $300-$500 a month on phone, in addition to sending money orders to buy food, soap, toothpaste, et cetera. So going to prison is an expensive entity. Even though people break the law to get money, you go to prison, you need money to survive inside of prison. So what are some of the most egregious things that you've experienced or witnessed, Marlena, in terms of how, the exorbitant rates they're charging for men and women inside of prison?
Yes, that's exactly right. There is a misconception that being incarcerated is free or something. But in fact, there are a lot of costs associated with being incarcerated. In New Jersey, we don't have what is called pay-to-stay fees in our prisons, but they have other kinds of fees. So if you want food or socks or maybe shower slippers to protect your feet because the showers are not very sanitary, those things cost you money. And in New Jersey, incarcerated people are actually required to have a job. It is part of being incarcerated. Now,
you mean have a job while they're inside?
Yes. So inside within the prison, they're required to work. Now, sometimes that can look like keeping one cell clean, but regardless, you are required to do some kind of labor while you are incarcerated. And the most people in the prisons make about $3 a day. That's
slavery.
Yes, we do not have to pay people. They're not entitled to wages, right? So when you think about how much money a person is capable of making, any amount, but certainly 20 or 30 cents for an email is a ridiculous amount of money to stay connected to someone.
You know, that's one of the things that really get me. The only people in America that pay for emails are prisoners. Why is it that we have to pay a fee to send an email and everybody else in America has that right free? Does that seem fair? What's going on with that?
That's the question, right? And in New Jersey, what the research found, which was done primarily by Worth Rises, which is actually, I encourage everyone to check them out. They are a national organization that works on prison communication fees. That's Worth Rises. They did, in partnership with folks in New Jersey, research that found that families pay about $15 million annually to stay in touch. So that's incarcerated people and their loved ones. And the burden of that falls primarily on their loved ones on the outside because the wages are so low on the inside. And so you have primarily, it is mothers, it is women, it is primarily Black women that
are
shouldering this cost, this burden. And about one in three families nationally that have incarcerated loved ones fall into debt just trying to pay these communication fees.
What's the name of that company you say? Rising, still Rising.
Here we go. Worth Rising. I got it.
All right. S-I-N-G.
Rises. Yes, I can put it.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
What happened, you know, if there's a difference between the state system, i.e. New Jersey, and the federal system in terms of this whole issue of telephone and email costs?
Yes, that's a great question. So there is a difference. The federal system will contract differently than the state. The state prisons here in New Jersey, we used to contract with two companies. Now we only contract with one company.
And what's the name of that company?
That company is now Viapath.
Okay.
I believe. Let me make sure. Yes. So we used to contract with Viapath and JPay. Now we no longer work with JPay. We only work with Viapath. And they have a monopoly on this in our state. And then it gets even more separate when you talk about the jails, because the state runs the prisons, but the jails are run by the counties.
Okay.
So they can work. They can.
They all have separate agreements.
Different fees. They work with the same company, but the fees can be set separately. So it can get really messy, and in different states contract with different companies and will have different rates. Compared to some other states, New Jersey's rates are lower, but there are states that don't charge these fees at all.
Mm-hmm. So most of the people in the jails are pretrial detainees, right? They have not even been convicted, i.e. that they should not be subjected to punishment, etc. So how does that wash out?
Yes, that's exactly right. I mean, these folks will still have to pay these high rates. We're talking Now, it used to be when I wrote that article in January, the rate was 35 cents to send an email. It was 34 cents to, or sorry, it was 4 cents per minute to make a phone call. Now the rates are a little bit different. It's 20 cents to send an email. It is still $4.80 for 30-minute video call. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, I just want to share this too. If anyone has ever been incarcerated or had a loved one that's incarcerated, I think you really understand how important it is to get physical mail, to get a photograph, to get a drawing maybe from your child or something like that. Well, on top of these fees, now you can no longer receive those things if you're in prison in the state of New Jersey. You have to, if you want to send your loved one a photograph or a letter, you have to send it to a facility in Nevada.
Wow.
They will scan that, and then they send the scanned image to the prison because they're worried about contraband is what they say.
Go ahead.
It's awful.
Yeah. You know, it's just amazing. When I was incarcerated, I know one of the things that we looked forward to was getting your mail, and usually your lady friend would put a perfume on the letter, and you would take it and wrap it up. We didn't have plastic bags, and so you take a potato chip bag, wash it out, and put the letter after you finish reading it into this potato chip bag, and so it can preserve the smell of the perfume, because the smells inside the jail, you didn't want to smell them. So it was a relief. I mean, you could smell that perfume. You think about who sent you the letter, etc. So all these things are being eliminated, and they say because of security. There's ways of getting around this, and you got folk now who are in prison, who, like we said at the top of the show, this new prison down in C-Card in El Salvador, you're not allowed to get visits, mail, or phone calls. So for the rest of your incarceration, you're cut off from society, from all of your families. And we know that having contact with family members have reported, some family members have been reported spend as much as $500 a month, or a year rather, $500 a month, just to keep their people in contact. There's an order that came down from the FCC on the Biden administration that these new caps for phone rates go into effect this year. How would this impact the system in New Jersey?
Yes. So that is why the rates went down a little bit, especially because we were already in compliance with the phones, but we were not, I believe, there were some of our jails were not in compliance. So they had to lower some of those. But yes, it won't have a huge impact just because our prisons were already in compliance with those rates, but it will certainly impact our jails. But so you were mentioned immigration at the top. These companies also contract with the feds for immigration detention, right? And they actually, the company that runs these kinds of communications inside detention facilities applied to the FCC for a waiver for these caps for immigrant detention specifically, so that they didn't have to meet the rate caps. That is happening right now. There is an appeals process going on. They're going to argue that case with the FCC.
You know, one thing that surprised me is that why is it that these companies, the two largest companies, that they did $1.5 billion a year in terms of prison phone systems, Secaucus and the one you mentioned, Pay. And the problem is these companies are monopolies and they receive exorbitant fees. And I was surprised to find out that every minute that these guys and women inside read, listen, send emails or receive emails, they have photographs, they have to pay for virtually all forms of messaging and communications from inside the institution and out. And the folk who are running these private prison phone services, they're $1.5 billion, and they got, as I said, a monopoly. But yet they also give what's called a kickback. They don't hide the word. They give a kickback, not a commission. They get a kickback for these prisons or these jails to allow them to provide this service at whatever rate they wanted, and they donate this money back to the prison, and the prison uses to hire other guards. And it doesn't seem right that our pain is somebody else's gain. And inmates have to pay for every aspect of trying to communicate with anybody on the other side of that fence. And no one has challenged this legally, as I have seen it, in terms of those folk who are getting these exorbitant kickbacks back to the correctional facilities for allowing them to gouge the inmates inside with these exorbitant rates. I never heard of it. We got to pay for emails. You got to pay to read a book. You got to pay to send a message. You got to pay to type. This is the only segment of society that has to pay for every aspect of this whole digital communication system. And this is not right. And it's on the back of those folks. And as you said at the beginning, Black women are the biggest victims of this whole system, because everybody calls it mother, the wife, the sister, the girlfriend. And that's who sticks by you when you go to prison. Your buddies stay or hang out off to the side. But Black women are going and shouldering this burden unnecessarily and unfairly and illegally. Is there any legal system, anything going on in terms of stopping these kickbacks? Because you're not, that's against the law, as we understand it. You can't give another entity a kickback for providing the service. And you've been paid and you're paying the people to let you do this service. What the hell can be done?
Yeah, I know. So in the state of New Jersey, our Department of Corrections does not take commission on phone calls specifically. So sometimes you'll hear the commissioner say, well, we don't take commissions. But they do take commissions on emails, and they do take commissions on video
calls. What about e-messaging?
Right. So, and that is roughly, they estimate that they are making a $1.6 million a year on the commissions on those things, even though they don't take commissions on phone calls. And what can be done is some of what we've been trying to do is pass legislation that prohibits the charging of these fees at all. And we know that's possible because it has happened in some other states. Some other states have done this already. So we know we can. New Jersey can do it too.
Well, now I'm studying, a lot of these companies are moving to the tablet service.
That's right.
And you want to explain that to our listeners, please?
Yes. So we, and New Jersey is doing this as well. So basically what this looks like is they put a kiosk that has tablets, and every incarcerated person will have access to a tablet. And that tablet is the way that they're able to communicate with their loved one, whether it's make a call or send an electronic message. And they're also able to listen to music or play games, depending on how the DOC wants to dole out those privileges. Now, it's unclear how this will work financially for the incarcerated person. So initially, there was some talk about having to pay for that tablet. But the DOC commissioner says that the first tablet they will receive, they shouldn't have to pay for. It's unclear to me. However, I will say that if the tablet is broken or
stolen,
then you might have to pay to replace it. And these tablets, from what I've heard, I don't know, I haven't seen them personally, but from what I've heard from people on the inside is that they are not iPads. These are like the very early, the first kind of tablet you can possibly.
First generation.
Yeah, they're, you know, old technology and they don't work that well. But I personally haven't seen them.
So what is the monitoring situation like with respect to the tablets? How, you know, like they monitor the phone conversations and all like that. How does that work with the tablet?
Yeah, so I'm not 100% sure. I don't know all the ins and outs of how they're doing that. It's my understanding that they are not constantly monitoring, that it's set up to flag specific things. But certainly if they wanted to, I'm sure that they could have access to whatever kind of surveillance that they want, but I don't think they have the capacity to be listening all the time.
Okay. You know, it says that Symbiotic Tobacco, Secaucus Technologies and ViPath Technologies, formerly known as Globatel Link, owns 80% of the market for prison telephones and jails. 80%, and it's been estimated doing $1.4 billion a year. This is $1.4 billion. And we read something that the attorney generals from 14 states, as well as prison telecom giants, are challenging the FCC's rate cap in court, arguing that the caps deprive correction facilities of necessary funding. Ain't that some crap? To overcharge somebody and saying that that money is you use and it's depriving you of necessary funding, and you're abusing, violating, and taking advantage of folks who can't afford it. And you're saying you don't want to stop because that's money that you don't want to lose, and you're being deprived of necessary funding. How asinine can that be? You know, it's like our pain is somebody else's gain, and this gain is in the billions. When I was in, the money from the federal system, from one of the prisons I was in, they used part of the money from the prison telephones to pay for the guards' picnic barbecues and the softball team of the correction officers' kids. So every year, the uniforms, the barbecues, etc., money came from the phone calls that the inmates and their families paid for to support the guards' social activities outside of the institution. And they say that is necessary funding. How in the hell can that be necessary funding? And that's a weak excuse to do this. And I'm glad these 14 attorney generals from 14 attorney generals from 14 states are challenging this, because we challenged the FCC and we didn't challenge them. We had somebody from the FCC 5 years ago on and trying to see what was going on, and come to find out that the people at the FCC used to work for Secaucus. Now, he was one of the primary bigwigs at the FCC, and sure, he worked as a former employee of Secaucus. Then he got to be placed as the chairman of one of the vice chairmen of the Federal Communications Commission. If that ain't a conflict of interest. So we see these kind of things going on, but why is it that, from your point of view, why is it that folks are not paying attention to this thing? You're talking about reducing crime, reducing recidivism, etc. Contact with your loved ones, ensure or increase that. So what is it that we can do?
You are so right. There has been consistent research that shows that being able to maintain connections to your loved ones is good for you. It is good for your outcomes. It is good for recidivism rates. So it's good for communities. And also, it's good for corrections officers, because when the morale is better inside prisons, it is better for them.
For everybody. Yes. Right? Yes.
So why isn't this more important? I think that the hard answer, but the answer that I feel in my heart, is that not enough people care about incarcerated people.
Yeah.
Not enough people care about the loved ones of incarcerated people. And I think there is still this mentality that there is a deserving and undeserving person. And if we have limited resources, we shouldn't be spending money on people that are undeserving, in quotes, right? This is the mentality that we are constantly pushing up against when we are trying to get funding to pass these kinds of policies. But I encourage people to be vocal about why this is important to them, why this is important to their communities, because more people than you know have been touched by the criminal legal system.
Yes, yes.
People don't like to talk about it because of the stigma, but a very large percentage of the American population knows or loves someone, or they themselves has been touched by this, has been incarcerated. And the more people that are talking about it and putting pressure on these folks, the more movement I think we can see happen on this issue.
Okay, this is WPFW, your station for jazz and justice. We're listening to Marlena Ubel telling us what is going on. And that is one of my questions that I was going to ask Marlena. What is it? What can we the people do to thwart these illegal, just sinful practices that, like you say, the people with the least are always charged the most. What can we do, all our listening audience? What are the things that we should start putting in place, demanding? What can we do to start this, to make a difference? Because this is insanity, the way black folks mostly are treated in this horrible criminal justice system.
You know, I want to add this to what she just said.
Oh, the telephone number.
Yeah.
Let me give that out. It's 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893 if you want to speak with Marlena or have a suggestion for us.
A question or comment. In North Carolina, you mentioned this at the beginning, Marlena, that a lot of jails now have stopped accepting regular mail. They require sinners to use an app in North Carolina to draft letters or create a digital card or drawing. You have to pay, go to them, pay them to send a letter or a card to your loved ones. And that's a fee connected to that. And it's unbelievable that you can't do this, because if your mother want, your wife or son or kid want to send your photograph, you got to send it to this company, pay for that, to send a scanned version of what the original was about. You can't receive anything from outside. So prison mail, as we know it, the postal services, is being phased out of institutions across the country. And these private companies are coming in offering electronic messages, emails, books that you can read. And everything that you access on that tablet is a charge or fee. And you may make $3 a day. They have some prisons, inmates don't make no money a day. Some make 15 or 20 cents. So how in the hell can you pay $200-$400 a month just to speak to your loved ones? And if your loved ones send you a photograph, you can't get it. You get a scanned copy of it. So you lose all what little personal contact or touch. Because when they send a letter, they send it from their heart and with blood. And they write the name of their little kid or draw a little picture on it. And you can see it. But when you get the scanned version, it's not legible. It's hard to read. And it's like you're being punished over on top of punishment. This kind of stuff has to stop, but it takes people like you, Marlena, and your organization, the New Jersey Policy Perspective, to fight this. Nikichi, we had Ms. Clyburn on, who was a member of the Federal Communications Commission. Her father was John Clyburn, the senator. Remember that?
Remember a couple of years ago, I think she was on the show, right?
Yeah, and she was fighting an uphill battle with the people at the Federal Communications Commission trying to get these caps and these fees lowered. And she was outnumbered or out-politricked. I put it that way. She was out-politricked to get this down. And this has been going on, as I know, over 30 years, Marlena. We've been fighting this issue over 30 years. And as soon as we get a step up, we're pushed back. When it's money involved, you're talking about $1.4 billion a year in prison telephone calls, emails, messages, tablets, etc. Has Zoom, I wonder how Zoom has played a part, or have Zoom played a part? We got what they call video visits. Is that the same thing as a Zoom, or can you describe, break down the difference?
Yeah, it is not Zoom. So the Zoom company is not involved. These are just completely run through exclusively these private prison companies. So you wouldn't have a call like that. It would be on your tablet that I described, or on the kiosk that you would take a video call. And it was a win that the FCC rate caps that came out, as you mentioned, because not only did it set caps for phone calls and video calls, but they also prohibit jails and prisons from taking commissions on phone calls. The FCC also made that a rule recently. So it's important to keep an eye on what's going on, because these private companies will be trying to fight this right now.
All right. This year, the new rate is supposed to go into effect. The new rate cap, which goes into effect this year, ranges from 6 cents per minute for all prisons in large jails into 12 cents per minute at very small jails for audio calls. When does this rate cap go into effect, or have you heard about it?
It should be already in effect, I believe. Yeah, this year, January. Oh, but they gave smaller facilities until April, but they should be in effect.
What can we do? I mean, I keep always asking that same question. As lay people, what can we do? Petitions, do we start these petitions, get signing? Does that make a difference?
Yeah, I think putting pressure on your electeds, but also making people aware, because I think a lot of people don't realize what's going on. And even if you are not incarcerated yourself or know someone that's been incarcerated, most people doesn't sit right with them to know that there are private prisons using somebody else's incarceration as an opportunity to make profit. That doesn't sit right with a lot of people. So I think if we raise this issue and we tell them, look, this is happening. This is happening right under your nose. And these private companies are literally using somebody else's freedom being taken away from them as a way to line their pockets. We are not okay with that, right?
You know, you say something in Jersey that the prisons, the jails rather, are run by the state or the county.
The counties run the jails.
And the counties are running on government regulations, policies, and laws. In all states, the law states that they prohibit or prevent monopolies or discrimination or the giving of fees for providing a service. But yet this is being permissible, being allowed in New Jersey and other states, that even though they don't have a contract with a private company, they allow these phone companies to come in and they violate federal or state laws in terms of monopolies, giving kickbacks and fees and commissions. And yet they allow this to go down, but yet as a county facility, it operates on a state and law. And these laws are a duplicate of federal laws that you cannot monopolize or give a kickback for providing a service to a vendor or a contractor. And yet this is going on and nobody's saying this is a violation of law. And nobody's attacked it from that point. I haven't heard anything. How do you see that, Marlena?
Yeah, I think this is a huge problem. It's not only a problem for prisons and jails, but for us too, right? Like where I live, I can only use, there's only one internet provider that actually works in my area. A lot of these utility companies have managed to create monopolies. And the things within the prisons and jails is the thing within the prisons and jails is that people ask, well, how did this even come to be? Like, why is it like this? And the answer is because these companies come in, they come to the state and they say, look, we'll put the infrastructure in at no cost to you. We just have to pay the people that are incarcerated, just have to pay a service to use it. And then we'll make our money back off of building that infrastructure inside the facility. And so they have well beyond made their money back. But if the state decides to kick them out, they will rip out all of the infrastructure and take it with them.
Okay. Mike, we have a call. We'll take our first caller. You want to add, please, question or comment, please?
Your name?
Good morning, Roach. This is Vic calling from Germany, man.
Where you been, man? You ain't heard from you in a while there, Rick. You still in Germany?
For the moment, but I just want to say to your audience, one, don't volunteer to go to prison unless you absolutely have to fight for your life or your family. Don't volunteer to go to prison. It's not just about phone calls. They intend for us to die as black people in prison there in America. Don't go unless you absolutely have to.
Thank you. That's our number one caller. He calls regularly from Germany. He's a D.C. resident, and he's very knowledgeable about what's going on around the country. We want to thank you for calling in, Rick.
Let me just say something, Roach, if I can, to our guest. My hat really goes off to her, because one of the things we find that when people are proximate to an issue, it impacts them deeply. And I know, Malenia, you were saying you had a friend or a colleague, your best friend, I think, who was very proximate to this issue and it spurred you to action. I just wish that this happened more and more often with people who are proximate to issues. So even those who are not proximate, those across the airways who are listening to Roach Brown's show, that they're spurred to action like you have been spurred to action. It makes a big difference.
Yes.
100%. And to be honest with you, I think people that are proximate to an issue, people with lived expertise, they're experts. They should be the ones speaking on this issue. But I also think, as you said, even those that are not proximate, because we are all connected to each other, whether we like it or not. And every person that I look at, I see my child in their eyes, right?
Yes, yes.
I hope that everyone else feels the same when they think.
Okay. We have another call on question or comment. Your name, please.
My name is Robert Moses. I'm concerned that we have, without revolutionary theory, there is no revolutionary movement, and we need a revolutionary movement. And so we need V.I. Lenin's The State and Revolution and Frederick Engels' Socialism, Utopian, and Scientific. And I think we would get straightened out on what needs to be done, because we cannot continue this situation where these fascists are in power.
Yes, thank
you. I'll leave it right there.
Well, you know what? One of the things that gets me is that the federal communications rule that they're changing the rates and fees this year for prisons and jails because they were charging too much money. So what the private companies are doing, they're backing up and using all the money they anticipate losing from the prison telephone. They're exploiting the tablet industry. You got to pay to send a text message. There's no place in the world that I know of that you have to pay to send a text or to receive a text. You got to pay to receive a text, pay to get photos accepted from your family. So even though the Federal Communications Committee are putting caps on these exorbitant fees, what they did was slide over to the left, reprogrammed it, and charge more fees for every individual aspect connected to. If you even read a book on a tablet, you got to pay per minute, per page, or some old jiggy boogie like that. So this stuff is, they're finding more ways to exploit. And what gets me is every year, thousands of men and women are released every year without no money in their pocket, without a bus, just a bus ticket. They don't have any place to stay for the night, change their clothes, nothing for food, etc. And yet they expect it to exist. And this stuff has to stop. We take our next caller. You're on the air, please. Question or comment?
I have a comment, bro. So how you doing, man? Merry Christmas, man.
Who is this? Marvin. What's your name?
I'm a Marvin from Fort Washington.
Hey, how you doing, Marvin from Fort Washington? Come on with it.
Hey, you know, man, I work in public safety and campus police in D.C. I'm not going to say where I work. And, you know, I talk with students. I talk with people every day about issues concerning the criminal justice system and these draconian laws and this new crime bill that Mayor Bowser sound into effect. And, you know, but issues, a lot of people not even aware of the incarceration rate of black women has gone up 800% in the last 10 years.
Yes, it has. Yes.
Yeah. A lot of people are not talking about things like that because people are not informed. So, you know, we all just got to communicate with our friends. Like, I done texted about 10 people and told them to tune your program in. I'm always supporting PFW and
a lot of the programs, man.
You know, it's word of mouth, man, because a lot of people are just not informed about these issues, man. Yeah. Hey, man.
You know, we did a show about a few. Thank you for calling in, partner. We did a show about 2 months ago about women in prison. And the fastest growing prison population is black women. And they share the burden of this pain. And 70% of black males in America have some contact or contact with the police department or the criminal justice system or the courts. So 70% of the Black community is impacted directly by corrections, courts, the police department, and prisons. So this is something that impacts us. Everybody I know get a phone, well, most people I know, has somebody that calls them from prison or somebody they send money order to, or they go visit somebody. And that is a majority of the Black community. So this impacts us tremendously. And it's sad that they make $1.4 billion and that money has been given to guards, unions, to the guards, juvenile, baseball teams, softball teams, the barbecues. And that money that came from inmates and their families should be allocated to release money, for gate money, for them men and women coming out of prison. If they made $1.4 billion, they can take a percentage of that profit and make it there for reentry assistance for those men and women coming out. At least give them a $500 or $1,000, some kind of money. But right now, they may be in prison for 10 years and spend over $10,000 on a phone call, and they can't get $1 of that money back when they're released. So we've been advocating or pushing that that money that's, that, that these commissions and kickbacks that's paid to the correct systems, the jails and prisons, a percentage of that money should be set aside for release or gratuitous money or gate money, since the majority of all the money comes from the inmates and their families. Should not they receive a part of that money back when they're released? That's what, have you heard of that, Marlena?
Yes, I, unfortunately, because this money is going into the pockets of not the state, but these private suits, that money goes into these private entities. They have no reason to use that money to give back to the community at all. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, quite frankly, I'm not someone that believes that prisons should exist in the first place, especially the way they exist in the society that we live in now. But when we have prisons like we do in the state of New Jersey that don't even have air conditioning in them in the dead of summer.
Yes.
I think some of that money should be going to making the care for the for folks.
You know, that's one of the things we advocate on this show in terms of the money that's generated from these prison phone calls, video visits, emails, and texts. A percentage of that should go to a fund, for a gratuitous fund, for those men and women being released, because they've been released with no money, or $15 or $20 or $50 per. They can hardly have enough money to buy something, a sandwich, when they get off the bus. So if our pain is somebody else's gain, we should share into that gain from our pain. And these prisons or these companies should make sure that, as opposed to paying the money to the guards union for buying new weapons and for dogs and uniforms and all kinds of SWAT gear and paraphernalia, a percentage of that money, since it came from the prisoners, should be donated back or contributed back to those people who built up that fund. We got a couple of minutes to go. Marlene, you want to give us some closing remarks and with your and your information on how to contact you?
Absolutely. I'm so grateful to be here with you all this morning. I'm just, thank you so much for chatting with me and for welcoming me.
And thank you, Marlena.
So some closing comments, because people keep asking about how to get involved. This is a local fight. The feds right now, especially right now with this administration, I don't think it's worth the time to try to fight the feds on a lot of these issues, but you still have power in your local governments, in the counties, and in your state elected representatives. They put the pressure on them. They represent you. And then you, my organization is New Jersey Policy Perspective. We are njpp.org. And my email is my last name, UBEL at njpp.org, if you want to get a hold of me. And you can follow us on all social media. It's at NJ Policy is our handle.
Is there a phone number that folks can call?
I don't have a public number right now. We just switched offices, but I can definitely, if they reach out through email, I can update when we do.
Okay. Nikita, you got something you want to share before you leave off?
No, I just want to say keep on keeping on, and thank you for illuminating this very, very, very critical issue.
Thank you. And you've been listening to Crossroads and with Mertine Nikichi and myself. And again, I just want to say in closing that this is something that we be dealing with on a regular basis. This seemed like a continuing problem that has different, every time you look at a different leg or a different arm, that they found other ways to tap into paying, making these folks the least and the less of those to pay the more and the most. Would you say? Okay, so we're at the end of Crossroads. We'll see you next week. We want to thank our guest, Marlena Ubell, Senior Policy Analyst for the New Jersey Policy Perspective. We're dealing with New Jersey because the same thing happening in Jersey is happening all over the country. We just had to start somewhere. So we started with New Jersey. We want to thank you for illuminating our audience to this problem that's not seem to be going away or getting any better. Thank you, Marlena Ubell, for joining us, and to our distinguished co-host, Nikichi Ataifa. Thank everybody for joining us, and we'll see you next Tuesday on Crossroads. And until next time, remember, your inner voice is never wrong. Merry Christmas. Inflation, no chance.
Peace. Hashtag You Must Learn is your Thursday at 6 p.m. Liberatory Educational Radio Show, and we mourn the April 25th passing of the educational giant, Dr. Jawanza Kanjufu. So the Hashtag You Must Learn Collective is hosting a four-hour special program honoring Dr. Kanjufu on Thursday, May 29th from 3 to 7 p.m. We're going to have legendary elders who work directly with him, as well as juggernaut educators who were inspired by Dr. Kanjufu to reflect on his life. That's right, a four-hour special program honoring Dr. Jawanza Kanjufu on Thursday, May 29th from 3 to 7 p.m. Tune into this special program as WPFW builds a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Oh, what a lovely, precious dream.
WPFW, in collaboration with the Josephine Butler Center, present the Jazz and Justice Festival, Sunday, June 22nd, noon until 8 p.m. An activation of music, poetry, social justice teach-ins, visual art, wellness, children's activities, and more in Malcolm X Park. WPFW personalities Saiz Kamaluddin, Kaaba Soul Singer, and Proverbs Reggae Band will be among the performers, with sets by DJ Lance Reynolds and Underdog. Also featured will be an art show curated by Adrian Ferguson of The Art of Noise and a community curated by Milani Douglas. Stay tuned to WPFW for updates and details.
On Saturday, May 31st and Sunday, June 1st, Capital Bop partners with Sycamore and Oak to present Jazz in the Heights, two full days of music in the Congress Heights neighborhood, featuring artists from D.C., Baltimore, and beyond. This two-day festival of jazz and culture will include appearances by Chelsea Green and the Green Project, Burkhead, the Desron Douglas Quartet, Deborah Bond, and more. Details at capitalbop.com or sycamoreandoak.com.
Everybody say bless, say bless, say bless. Yeah!
Thank you, family. We're so grateful for each and every one of you who made a pledge during our spring membership drive. Though we didn't quite reach the finish line, your love carried us far. Your pledges, your presence, your belief in WPFW. They remind us that this station is more than radio. It's a rhythm, a refuge, a revolution. We trust you'll keep walking with us, dancing with us, building with us. Because this community-powered radio station rises with you. And only with you. Thank you for keeping the beat alive.
We rest in the city. We rest in the city.
Equal Portions is delighted to join Jazz and Justice Radio, WPFW, every Monday at 1 p.m. We're talking everything food justice, interviewing folks across all sectors, and playing the hottest new DMV music with your host, Stacia Lamira.
Hey, y'all. On Equal Portions, we'll be discussing all aspects of the way we interact with food, from the problems affecting our communities to the history and the story of the food around us and the local individuals within the food community. That's Equal Portions, Mondays at 1 p.m. on WPFW. building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Freedom!
June is Caribbean American Heritage Month. Thus, CAWI, CPN, ICS, AFI, and Africa World Art Project present the 23rd DC Caribbean Film Fest, June 6th to June 12th, at AFI Silver Theater and Cultural Center in downtown Silver Spring. The festival showcases the best in Caribbean cinema with films such as the U.S. premiere of Fanon and more. The DC Caribbean Film Fest, June 6th to June 12th. Information at afi.com/silver or 301-495-6700. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.